Story 9 of Reteef, Intergalactic Diplomat, in Space. Ed Reed Short Sci-Fi, Volume 5. Mightiest Corn by Keith Laumer. Chapter 1. Ambassador Nitworth glowered across his mirror-polished 9-foot platinum desk at his assembled staff.
Gentlemen, are any of you familiar with a race known as the Quant?
There was a moment of profound silence. Nitworth leaned forward, looking solemn.
They were a warlike race, known in the sector back in Concordia times, perhaps 200 years ago. They vanished as suddenly as they had appeared. There was no record of where they went.
He paused for effect.
They have now reappeared, occupying the inner planet of this system.
But, sir, Second Secretary Magnan offered, such uninhabited terrestrial territory.
Indeed, Mr. Magnan,
Nitworth smiled icily.
It appears the Quant do not share that opinion.
He plucked a heavy parchment from a folder before him, harumphed, and read aloud.
His Supreme Excellency the Quant, Regent of Quant, Overlord of the Galactic Destiny, greets the terrestrials and, with reference to the presence in mandated territory of terrestrial squatters, has the honour to advise that he will require the use of his outer world on the 30th day. Then will the Quant come with steel and fire. Receive, terrestrials, renewed assurances of my awareness of your existence, and let those who dare gird for the contest.
Frankly, I wouldn't call it conciliatory, Magnan said.
Nitworth tapped the paper with a finger.
We have been served, gentlemen, with nothing less than an ultimatum.
The military attaché began.
There happens to be more to this piece of truculence than appears on the surface,
the ambassador cut in. He paused, waiting for interested frowns to settle into place.
Note, gentlemen, that these invaders have appeared on terrestrial-controlled soil, and without so much as a flicker from the instruments of the Navigational Monitor Service.
The military attaché blinked.
That's absurd,
he said flatly. Nitworth slapped the table.
We're up against something new, gentlemen. I have considered every hypothesis from cloaks of invisibility to time travel. The fact is, the Quant fleets are indetectable.
The military attaché pulled at his lower lip.
In that case, we can't draw conclusions with these fellows until we have an indetectable drive of our own. I recommend a crash project. In the meantime...
I'll have my boy starting to crack this thing,
the chief of the confidential terrestrial source section spoke up.
I'll fit out a couple of volunteers with plastic beaks. No cloak and dagger work, gentlemen. Long-range policy will be worked out by deep think teams back at the department. Our role will be a holding action. Now I want suggestions for a comprehensive, well-rounded and decisive course for meeting this threat. Any recommendations?
The political officer placed his fingertips together.
What about a stiff note demanding an extra week's time?
No, no begging,
the economic officer objected.
I'd say a calm, dignified, aggressive withdrawal, as soon as possible. We don't want to give them the idea we spook easily,
the military attaché said.
Let's delay the withdrawal, say until tomorrow.
Early tomorrow,
Magnan said.
Or maybe later today. Well, I see you're of a mind with me,
Nitworth nodded.
Our plan of action is clear, but it remains to be implemented. We have a population of over 15 million individuals to relocate.
He eyed the political officer.
I want 5 proposals for resettlement on my desk by 0800 hours tomorrow.
Nitworth rapped out instructions. Harry-looking staff members arose and hurried from the room. Magnan eased toward the door.
Where are you going, Magnan?
Nitworth snapped.
Since you're so busy, I sort of just slipped back down to Comink. It was a most interesting orientation lecture, Mr. Ambassador. Be sure to let us know how it works out.
Kindly return to your chair,
Nitworth said coldly.
A number of chores remain to be assigned. I think you, Magnan, need a little field experience. I want you to get over to Roulette 1 and take a look at these Quant personally.
Magnan's mouth opened and closed soundlessly.
Not afraid of a few Quant, are you, Magnan?
Afraid? Good Lord, no. It's just that I'm afraid I may lose my head and do something rash as I go.
Nonsense. A diplomat is immune to heroic impulses. Take Reteef along. No dawdling now. I want you on the way in 2 hours. Notify the transport pool at once. Now get going.
Magnan nodded unhappily and went into the hall.
Oh, Reteef,
Nitworth said. Reteef turned.
Try to restrain Mr. Magnan from any impulsive moves in any direction.
Chapter 2 Retief and Magnan topped a ridge and looked down across a slope of towering tree shrubs and glossy violet-stemmed palms, set among flamboyant blossoms of yellow and red, reaching down to a strip of white beach with the blue sea beyond.
"A delightful vista," Magnan said, mopping at his face. "A pity we couldn't locate the Quant. We'll go back now and report."
"I'm pretty sure the settlement is off to the right," Retief said. "Why don't you head back for the boat while I ease over and see what I can observe?"
"Retief, we're engaged in a serious mission. This is not the time to think of sightseeing."
"I'd like to take a good look at what we're giving away."
"See here, Retief. One might almost receive the impression that you're questioning core policy."
"One might at that. The Quant have made their play, but I think it might be valuable to take a look at their cards before we fold. If I'm not back at the boat in an hour, lift without me."
"You expect me to make my way back alone?"
"It's directly downslope."
Retief broke off, listening. Magnan clutched at his arm. There was a sound of crackling foliage. 20 feet ahead, a leafy branch swung aside. An 8-foot biped stepped into view, long, thin, green-clad legs, with back-bending knees moving in quick, bird-like steps. A pair of immense black-lensed goggles covered staring eyes, set among bushy green hair, above a great bone-white beak. The crest bobbed as the creature cocked its head, listening. Magnan gulped audibly. The Quant froze, head tilted, beak aimed directly at the spot where the terrestrial stood in the deep shade of a giant trunk.
"I'll go for help,"
Magnan squeaked. He whirled and took 3 leaps into the brush. A second great green-clad figure rose up to block his way. He spun, darted to the left. The first Quant pounced, grappled Magnan to its narrow chest. Magnan yelled, threshing and kicking, broke free, turned, and collided with the 8-foot alien, coming in fast from the right. All three went down in a tangle of limbs. Retief jumped forward, hauled Magnan free, thrust him aside and stopped, right fist cocked. The two Quant lay groaning feebly.
"Nice piece of work, Mr. Magnan," Retief said. "You nailed both of them."
"Those undoubtedly are the most bloodthirsty, aggressive, merciless countenances it has ever been my misfortune to encounter,"
Magnan said.
"It hardly seems fair. 8 feet tall and faces like that."
The smaller of the two captive Quant ran long, slender fingers over a bony shin, from which he had turned back the tight-fitting green trousers.
"It's not broken,"
he whistled, nasally in passable terrestrial, eyeing Magnan through the heavy goggles now badly cracked.
"Small thanks to you."
Magnan smiled loftily.
"I dare say you'll think twice before interfering with peaceable diplomats in future."
"Diplomats? Surely you jest."
"Never mind us," Retief said. "It's you fellows we'd like to talk about. How many of you are there?"
"Only Zub and myself."
"I mean altogether. How many Quant?"
The alien whistled shrilly.
"Here, no signalling,"
Magnan snapped, looking around.
"That was merely an expression of amusement."
"You find the situation amusing? I assure you, sir, you're in perilous straits at the moment. I may fly into another rage, you know."
"Please restrain yourself. I was merely somewhat astonished."
A small whistle escaped.
"At being taken for a Quant."
"Aren't you a Quant?"
"Aye. Great snail trails, no."
More stifled whistles of amusement escaped the beaked face.
"Both Zub and I are Verp. Naturalists, as it happens."
"You certainly look like a Quant."
"Oh, not at all. Except, perhaps, to a terrestrial. The Quant are sturdily built rascals, all over 10 feet in height. And, of course, they do nothing but quarrel. A drone caste, actually."
"A caste? You mean they're biologically the same as you?"
"Not at all. A Verp wouldn't think of fertilizing a Quant.
I mean to say you are the same basic stock, descended from a common ancestor, perhaps. We are all Pud's creatures."
"What are the differences between you, then?"
"Why, the Quant are argumentative, boastful, lacking in appreciation for the finer things of life. One dreads to contemplate descending to their level."
"Do you know anything about a note passed to Terrestrial Ambassador at Smorbod?" Retief asked. The beak twitched.
"Smorbod? I know of no place called Smorbod."
"The outer planet of this system?"
Yes. We call it Guzzum. I'd heard that some sort of creatures had established a settlement there, but I confess I pay little note to such matters."
"We're wasting time, Retief," Magnan said. "We must truss these chaps up, hurry back to the boat, and make our escape. You heard what they said."
"Are there any Quant down there at the harbour where the boats are?" Retief asked.
"At Tarun, you mean? Ah, yes. Planning some adventure."
"That would be the invasion of Smorbod," Magnan said.
Unless we hurry, Ritchie, if we're likely to be caught there as the last of the evacuees.
How many Kont would you say there are at Tarun?
Oh, a very large number, perhaps 15 or 20.
15 or 20 what?
Magnan looked perplexed.
15 or 20 Kont.
You mean there are only 15 or 20 individual Kont in all?
Another whistle.
Not at all. I was referring to the local Kont only. There are more at the other centres, of course.
And the Kont are responsible for the ultimatum, unilaterally?
I suppose so. It sounds like them. A truculent group, you know. And interplanetary relations are rather a hobby of theirs.
Zub moaned and stirred. He sat up slowly, rubbing his head. He spoke to his companion in a shrill, alien clatter of consonants.
What did he say?
Poor Zub. He blames me for his bruises, since it was my idea to gather you as specimens.
You should have known better than to tackle that fierce-looking creature,
Zub said, pointing his beak at Magnum.
How does it happen that you speak terrestrial? Retief asked.
Oh, one picks up all sorts of dialects. It's quite charming, really,
Magnan said.
Such a quaint, archaic accent.
Suppose you went down to Tarun, Retief asked. What kind of reception will we get?
That depends. I wouldn't recommend interfering with the Gwyll or the Roik. It's their nest-mending time, you know. The Boog will be busy mating. Such a tedious business. And of course the Kont are tied up with their ceremonial feasting. I'm afraid no one will take any notice of you.
Do you mean to say, Magnan demanded, that these ferocious Kont, who have issued an ultimatum to the Corps Diplomatique Terrestrienne, who openly avow their occupied world, would ignore terrestrials in their midst, if at all possible?
Retief got to his feet. I think our course is clear, Mr. Magnan. It's up to us to go down and attract a little attention. Chapter 3.
I'm not at all sure. We're going about this in the right way,
Magnan puffed, trotting at Retief's side.
This fellow Zub and Zlan, oh, they seem affable enough. But how can we be sure of it not being led into a trap?
We can't. Magnan stopped short.
Let's go back.
All right, Retief said. Of course, there may be an ambush. Magnan moved off.
Let's keep going.
The party emerged from the undergrowth at the edge of a great brush-grown mound. Slun took the lead, rounded the flank of the hillock, halted at a rectangular opening cut into the slope.
You can find your way easily from here,
he said.
You'll excuse us, I hope.
Nonsense, Slun,
Zab pushed forward.
I'll escort our guests to Kont Hall.
He twittered briefly to his fellow Verp. Slun twittered back.
I don't like it, Retief,
Magnan whispered.
Those fellows are plotting mischief.
Threaten them with violence, Mr. Magnan. They're scared of you.
That's true, and the drubbing they received was well deserved. I'm a patient man, but there are occasions.
Come along, please,
Zub called.
Another 10 minutes' walk.
See here, we have no interest in investigating this barrow, Magnan announced. We wish you to take us direct to Tarun to interview your military leaders regarding the ultimatum.
Yes, of course. Kont Hall lies here inside the village.
This is Tarun, a modest civic centre, sir.
But there are those who love it.
No wonder we didn't observe their works from the air, Magnan muttered. Camouflaged.
She moved hesitantly through the opening. The party moved along a wide, deserted tunnel, which sloped down steeply, then levelled off and branched. Zub took the centre branch, ducking slightly under the 9-foot ceiling, lit at intervals with what appeared to be primitive incandescent panels.
Few signs of an advanced technology here, Magnan whispered. These creatures must devote all their talents to warlike enterprise.
Ahead, Zub slowed. A distant susurration was audible, a sustained high-pitched screeching.
Softly now, we approach Kont Hall. They can be an irascible lot when disturbed at their feasting.
When will the feast be over?
Magnan called hoarsely.
In another few weeks, I should imagine. If, as you say, they're scheduled an invasion for next month.
Look here, Zub.
Magnan shook a finger at the tall alien.
How is it that these Kont are allowed to embark on piratical ventures of this sort without reference to the wishes of the majority?
Oh, the majority of the Kont favour the move, I imagine.
These few hotheads are permitted to embroil the planet in war.
Oh, they don't embroil the planet in war. They merely...
This is fantastic. I've heard of iron-fisted military cliques before, but this is madness.
Come softly now,
Zub beckoned, moving toward a bend in the yellow-lit corridor. Retief and Magnan moved forward. The corridor debouched through a high double door into a vast oval chamber, high-domed, gloomy, panelled in dark wood and hung with tattered banners, scarred halberds, pikes, rusted longswords, crushed spears of patinade hauberks, pitted radiation armor, corroded power rifles, the immense mummified heads of horned and fanged animals, great guttering torches in wall brackets and in stands along the length of the long table shed a smoky light that reflected from the mirror polish of the red granite floor, gleamed on polished silver bowls and paper-thin glass, shone jewel-red and gold through dark bottles, and cast long flickering shadows behind the 15 trolls at the board. Lesser trolls, beaked, bush-haired, great-eyed, trotted briskly, bird-kneed, bearing steaming platters, stood in groups of three, strumming slender bottle-shaped lutes, or pranced in intricate patterned dance, unnoticed in the shrill uproar, as each of the magnificently draped, belted, feathered, and jeweled cornet carried on a shouted conversation with an equally noisy fellow.
"Most interesting display of barbaric splendor,"
Magnan breathed. "Now we'd better be getting back."
"Oh, a moment," Zub said. "Observe the cornet, the tallest of the feasters. He with the headdress of crimson, purple, silver, and pink.
12 feet if he's an inch," Magnan estimated.
"And now we really must hurry along. That one is the chief among these rowdies. I'm sure you want a word with him. He controls not only the Tarunian vessels, but those from the other centers as well."
"What kind of vessels? Warships?"
"Certainly. What other kind would the Quant bother with?"
"I don't suppose," Magnan said casually, "that you'd know the type, tonnage, armament, and manning of these vessels, and how many units comprise the fleet, and where they're based at present."
"They're fully automated, 20,000-ton all-purpose dreadnoughts. They mount a variety of weapons. The Quant are fond of that sort of thing. Each of the Quant has his own, of course. They're virtually identical, except for the personal touches each individual has given his ship."
"Great heavens, Retief," Magnan explained in a whisper. "It sounds as though these brutes employ a battle armada as simpler souls might set of toy sailboats."
Retief stepped past Magnan and Zub to study the feasting hall. I can see that their votes would carry all the necessary weight.
"And now an interview with the Khorne himself," Zub shrilled. "If you'll kindly step along, gentlemen."
"That won't be necessary," Magnan said hastily. "I've decided to refer the matter to committee."
"After having come so far," Zub said, "it would be a pity to miss having a cosy chat."
There was a pause.
"Ah, Retief," Magnan said. "Zub has just presented a most compelling argument."
Retief turned. Zub stood gripping an ornately decorated power pistol in one bony hand, a slim needler in the other. Both were pointed at Magnan's chest. "I suspected you had hidden qualities, Zub," Retief commented.
"See here, Zub, for diplomats," Magnan started.
"Careful, Mr. Magnan, you may goad him to a frenzy."
"By no means," Zub whistled. "I might prefer to observe the frenzy of the Quant when presented with the news that two peaceful verp have been assaulted and kidnapped by bullying interlopers. If there's anything that annoys the Quant, it's Quant-like behaviour in others. Now step along, please."
"Rest assured, this will be reported."
"I doubt it.
You'll face the wrath of enlightened galactic opinion."
"Oh, how big a navy does enlightened galactic opinion have?"
"Stop scaring him, Mr. Magnan. He may get nervous and shoot." Retief stepped into the banquet hall, headed for the resplendent figure at the head of the table. A trio of flute players broke off in mid-bleat, staring. An inverted pyramid of tumblers blinked as Retief swung past, followed by Magnan and the tall verp. The shrill chatter of the table faded. Khan turned as Retief came up, blinking 3-inch eyes. Zub stepped forward, gibbered, waving his arms excitedly. Khan pushed back his chair, a low, heavily padded stool, and stared unwinking at Retief, moving his head to bring first one great round eye, then the other to bear. There were small blue veins in the immense fleshy beak, the bushy hair, springing out in a giant halo around the greyish, porous-skinned face, was wiry, stiff moss-green, with tufts of chartreuse fuzz surrounding what appeared to be tympanic membranes. The tall headdress of scarlet silk and purple feathers was slightly askew, and a loop of pink pearls had slipped down above one eye. Zub finished his speech and fell silent, breathing hard. Khorne looked Retief over in silence, then belched. "Not bad," Retief said admiringly. "Maybe we could get up a match between you and Ambassador Sternwheeler. You've got the volume on him, but he's got timbre."
"So," Khorne hooted in a resonant tenor, "you come from Guzzum, eh? Or Smallbrood, as I think you call it. What is it you're after? More time? A compromise? Negotiations? Peace?"
He slammed a bony hand against the table.
"The answer is no."
Zub twitted. Corn cocked an eye, motioned to a servant.
Chain that one,
he indicated Magnan. His eyes went to Retief.
This one's bigger. You'd best chain him too.
Fay, your excellency.
Magnan started, stepping forward.
Stay back, Corn hooted. Stand over there where I can keep an eye on you.
Your excellency, I'm empowered.
Not here, you're not, Corn trumpeted. Want peace, do you? Well, I don't want peace. I've had a surfeit of peace these last 2 centuries. I want action, loot, adventure, glory.
He turned to look down the table.
How about it, fellows? It's water the knife, eh?
There was a momentary silence from all sides.
I guess so,
grunted a giant Cornt in iridescent blue with flame-coloured plumes. Corn's eyes bulged. He half rose.
We've been all over this,
he bassooned. He clamped bony fingers in the hilt of a light rapier.
I thought I'd make my point. Oh, sure, Corn.
You bet.
I'm convinced.
Corn rumbled and resumed his seat.
All for one and one for all. That's us.
And you're the one, eh, Corn? Retief commented. Magnan cleared his throat.
I sense some of you gentlemen are not convinced of the wisdom of this move.
He piped, looking along the table at the silks, jewels, beaks, feather-decked crests and staring eyes.
Silence! Corn hooted. No use your talking to my loyal lieutenants anyway, he added. They do whatever I convince them they ought to do.
But I'm sure that on more mature consideration
I can lick any Corn in the house, Corn said. That's why I'm Corn.
He belched again. A servant came up, staggering under a weight of chain, dropped it with a crash at Magnan's feet. Zub aimed the guns while the servant wrapped 3 loops around Magnan's wrists, snapped a lock in place.
Who next?
The guns pointed at Retief's chest. He held out his arms. 4 loops of silvery-grey chain in half-inch links dropped around them. The servant cinched them up tight, squeezed a lock through the ends and closed it.
No,
Corn said, lolling back in his chair, glass in hand.
There's a bit of sport to be had here, lads. What shall we do with them?
Let them go,
the blue and flame Corn said glumly.
You can do better than that, Corn hooted. Now here's a suggestion. We carve them up a little, lop off the external labia and pinna, say, and ship them back.
Good Lord, Retief, he's talking about cutting off our ears and sending us home mutilated. What a barbaric proposal.
It wouldn't be the first time a terrestrial diplomat got a trimming, Retief commented.
It should have had the effect of stimulating the Terries to put up a reasonable scrap,
Corn said judiciously.
I have a feeling that they're thinking of giving up without a struggle. Oh, I doubt that,
the blue and flame Corn said. Why should they?
Corn rolled an eye at Retief and another at Magnan.
Take these two, he hooted. I wager they came here to negotiate a surrender.
Well,
Magnan started. Hold it, Mr. Magnan, Retief said. I'll tell him.
What's your proposal?
Corn whistled, taking a gulp from his goblet.
A 50-50 split? Monetary reparations? Alternate territory? I can assure you it's useless. We can't like to fight.
I'm afraid you've gotten the wrong impression, Your Excellency, Retief said blandly. We didn't come to negotiate. We came to deliver an ultimatum.
What?
Corn trumpeted. Behind Retief, Magnan spluttered. We plan to use this planet for target practice, Retief said. A new type hell bomb we've worked out. Have all your people off it in 72 hours, or suffer the consequences. Chapter 4
You have the gall, Corn stormed, to stand here in the centre of Corn Hall, uninvited at that, and in chains.
Oh, these, Retief said. He tensed his arms. The soft aluminum links stretched and broke. He shook the light metal free. We diplomats like to go along with colourful local customs, but I wouldn't want to mislead you. Now as to the evacuation of Rulet 1. Zub screeched, waved the guns. The Corns were jabbering.
I told you there were brutes,
Zub shrilled. Corn slammed his fist down on the table.
I don't care what they are, he honked. Evacuate hell. I can field 85 combat-ready ships.
And we can englobe every one of them with 1,000 peace enforcers with 100 megaton second firepower each.
Retief, Magnan tugged at his sleeve. Don't forget our superdrive.
That's all right, they don't have one. But
we'll take you on, Corn French horned. We're the Corn, we glory in battle, we live in fame or go down in
hogwash,
the flame and blue Corn cut in.
If it wasn't for you, Corn, we could sit around and feast and brag, enjoy life without having to prove anything.
Corn, you seem to be the firebrand, eh? Retief said. I think the rest of the boys would listen to reason.
over my dead body.
My idea exactly, Retief said. You claim you can lick any man in the house. Unwind yourself in your ribbons and stab out here on the floor, and we'll see how good you are at backing up your conversation. Magnan hovered at Retief's side.
12 feet tall, he moaned. And did you notice the size of those hands?
Retief watched as Khan's aides helped him out of his formal trappings. I wouldn't worry too much, Mr. Magnan. This is a light G world. I doubt if old Khan would weigh up at much more than 250 standard pounds here.
But that's phenomenal reach.
I'll peck away at him at knee level. When he bends over to swat me, I get a crack at him. Across the cleared floor, Khan shook off his helpers with a snort.
Enough! Let me at the upstart!
Retief moved out to meet him, watching the abrased backward-jointed arms. Khan stalked forward, long lean legs bent, long horny feet clacking against the polished floor. The other aliens, both servitors and bejeweled Khaunt, formed a wide circle, all eyes unwaveringly on the combatants. Khan struck suddenly, a long arm flashing down in a vicious cut at Retief, who leaned aside, caught one lean shank below the knee. Khan bent to haul Retief from his leg and staggered back as a haymaker took him just below the beak. A screech went up from the crowd as Retief leaped clear. Khan hissed and charged. Retief whirled aside, then struck the alien's off leg in a flying tackle. Khan leaned, arms windmilling, crashed to the floor. Retief whirled, dived for the left arm, whipped it behind the narrow back, seized Khan's neck in a stranglehold and threw his weight backward. Khan fell on his back, his legs squatted out at an awkward angle. He squawked and beat his free arm on the floor, reaching in vain for Retief. Zub stepped forward, pistols ready. Magnan stepped before him.
Need I remind you, he said icily, that this is an official diplomatic function. I can brook no interference from disinterested parties.
Zub hesitated. Magnan held out a hand.
I must ask you to hand me your weapons, Zub.
Look here, Zub began.
I may lose my temper, Magnan hinted.
Zub lowered the guns, passed them to Magnan. He thrust them into his belt with a sour smile, turned back to watch the encounter. Retief had thrown a turn of violet silk around Khorne's left wrist, bound it to the alien's neck. Another wisp of stuff floated from Khorne's shoulder. Retief, still holding Khan in an awkward sprawl, wrapped it around one outflung leg, trussed ankle and thigh together. Khan flopped, hooting. At each movement, the constricting loop around his neck jerked his head back, the green crest tossing wildly.
If I were you, I'd relax, Retief said, rising and releasing his grip.
Khan got a leg under him. Retief kicked it. Khan's chin hit the floor with a hollow clack. He wilted, an ungainly tangle of overlong limbs and gay silks. Retief turned to the watching crowd.
Next, he called.
The blue and flame Khan stepped forward.
Maybe this will be a good time to elect a new leader, he said. Now my qualifications...
Sit down, Retief said loudly.
He stepped to the head of the table, seated himself in Khan's vacated chair.
A couple of you finished trussing Khan up for me.
But we must select a leader.
That won't be necessary, boys. I'm your new leader.
As I see it, Retief said, dribbling cigar ashes into an empty wine glass, you can't like to be warriors, but you don't particularly like to fight.
We don't mind a little fighting, within reason. And of course, as Khaunt, we're expected to die in battle. But what I say is, why rush things?
I have a suggestion, Magnan said. Why not turn the reins of government over to the Verp? They seem a level-headed group.
What good would that do? Khaunt or Khaunt, it seems... There's always one among us who's a slave to instinct, and naturally we have to follow him.
Why?
Because that's the way it's done.
Why not do it another way?
Magnan offered.
Now I'd like to suggest community singing.
If we gave up fighting, we might live too long. Then what would happen?
Live too long?
Magnan looked puzzled.
When estivating time comes, there'd be no burrows for us. Anyway, with the new Khaunt stepping on our heels.
I've lost the thread, Magnan said. Who was the new Khaunt?
After estivating the Verp Molt, and then their Khaunt, of course. The Gwyll become Boog, the Boog become Wyke, the Wyke metamorphosize into Verp.
You mean Slun and Zub, the mild-natured naturalists, will become warmongers like Khaun?
Very likely. The milder the Verp, the wilder the Khaun, as the old saying goes.
What do Khaunt turn into? Retief asked.
That's a good question. So far none have survived Khaunthood.
Have you sort of forsaking your warlike ways? Magnan asked. What about taking up sheep herding and regular church attendance?
Don't mistake me. You can't like a military life. It's
Great sport to sit around roaring fires and drink and tell lies and then go dashing off to enjoy a brisk affray and some leisurely looting afterward. But we prefer a nice numerical advantage, not this business of tackling you terrestrials over in Guzzum. It was a mad notion. We had no idea what your strength was. And now that's all off, of course,
Aglan chirped.
Now that we've had diplomatic relations and all. Oh, by no means. The fleet lists 30 days. After all, we're corned. We have to satisfy our drive to action.
But Mr. Retief is your leader now. He won't let you.
Only a dead corn stays home when attack day comes. And even if he orders us all to cut our throats, there are still the other centres, all with their own leaders. No, gentlemen, the invasion is definitely on.
Why don't you go and invade somebody else? Magnan suggested. I could name some very attractive prospects. Outside my sector, of course.
Hold everything, Retief said. I think we've got the basis of a deal here. Chapter 5. At the head of a double column of gaudily caprisoned Quant, Retief and Magnan strolled across the ramp toward the bright tower of the CDT Sector HQ. Ahead, gates opened, and a black core limousine emerged, flying an ambassadorial flag under a plain square of white.
Curious, Magnan commented. I wonder what the significance of the white ensign might be.
Retief raised a hand. The column halted with a clash of accoutrements and a rasp of Quant boots. Retief looked back along the line. The high white sun flashed on bright silks, polished buckles, deep-dyed plumes, butts of pistols, a soft gleam of leather.
A brave show indeed,
Magnan commented approvingly.
I confess the idea has merit.
The limousine pulled up with a squeal of brakes, stood on two fat-tired wheels, gyros humming softly. The hatch popped open. A portly diplomat stepped out.
Fie, Ambassador Nitverth,
Magnan glowed.
This is very kind of you.
Keep cool, Magnan,
Nitworth said in a strained voice.
We'll attempt to get you out of this.
He stepped past Magnan's outstretched hand and looked hesitantly at the ramrod straight line of Quant, 85 strong, and beyond the 85 tall Quant dreadnoughts.
Good afternoon, sir. Your excellency,
Nitworth said, blinking up at the leading Quant.
You are commander of the strike force, I assume?
No, the Quant said shortly.
I wish to request 72 hours in which to evacuate headquarters.
Nitworth ploughed on.
Mr. Ambassador, Retief said, this...
Don't panic, Retief. I'll attempt to secure your release,
Nitworth hissed over his shoulder.
Now...
You will address our leader with more respect,
the tall Quant hooted, eyeing Nitworth ominously from 11 feet up.
Oh, yes, indeed, sir. Your Excellency. Commander, now about the invasion.
Mr. Secretary,
Magnan tugged at Nitworth's sleeve.
In heaven's name, but maybe to give you in peace,
Nitworth snapped. He rearranged his features.
Now, Your Excellency, we've arranged to evacuate Smallbrod, of course, just as you requested.
Requested?
The Quant honked.
Demanded, that is, quite rightly, of course. Ordered, instructed, and, of course, we'll be only too pleased to follow any other instructions you might have.
You don't quite get the big picture, Mr. Secretary, Retief said. This isn't...
Silence, confound you!
Nitworth barked. The leading Quant looked at Retief. He nodded. Two bony hands shot out, seized Nitworth, and stuffed a length of bright pink silk into his mouth, and spun him around and held him facing Retief. If you don't mind my taking this opportunity to brief you, Mr. Ambassador, Retief said blandly. I think I should mention that this isn't an invasion fleet. These are the new recruits for the Peace Enforcement Corps. Magnan stepped forward, glanced at the gag in Ambassador Nitworth's mouth, hesitated, then cleared his throat.
We felt, he said, that the establishment of a foreign brigade within the PE Corps structure would provide the element of novelty the department has requested in our recruiting, and at the same time would remove the stigma of terrestrial chauvinism from future punitive operations.
Nitworth stared, eyes bulging. He grunted, reaching for the gag, caught the Quant's eye on him, dropped his hands to his sides. I suggest we get the troops in out of the hot sun, Retief said. Magnan edged close.
What about the gag?
He whispered. Let's leave it where it is for a while, Retief murmured. It may save us a few concessions. An hour later, Nitworth, breathing freely again, glowered across his desk at Retief and Magnan.
This entire affair,
he rumbled,
has made me appear to be a fool. But we who are privileged to serve on your staff already know how clever you are,
Magnan burbled. Nitworth purpled.
You're skirting insolence, Magnan,
he roared.
Why was I not informed of the arrangements? What was I to assume at the sight of 85 war vessels over my headquarters, unannounced? We tried to get through, but our wavelengths, bare sterner souls, and I would have quailed at the spectacle. Oh, but you were perfectly justified in panicking. I did not panic,
Nitworth bellowed.
I merely adjusted to the apparent circumstances. Now, I'm of two minds as to the advisability of this foreign legion idea of yours. Still, it may have merit. I believe the wisest course would be to dispatch them on a long training cruise in an uninhabited sector of space.
The office windows rattled.
What the devil?
Nitworth turned, stared out at the ramp where Korn's ship rose slowly in a column of pale blue light. The vibration increased as a second ship lifted, then a third. Nitworth whirled on Magnan.
What's this? Who wanted those recruits to embark without my permission?
I took the liberty of giving them an errand to run, Mr. Secretary, Retief said. There was that little matter of the Groasi infiltrating the Serenian system. I sent the boys off to handle it.
Call them back at once.
I'm afraid that won't be possible. They're under orders to maintain total communications silence until completion of the mission.
Nitworth drummed his fingers on the desktop. Slowly a thoughtful expression dawned. He nodded.
This may work out, he said. I should call them back. But since the fleet is out of contact, I am unable to do so, correct? Thus I can hardly be held responsible for any over-enthusiasm in chastising the Groasi.
He closed one eye in a broad wink at Magnan.
Very well, gentlemen. I'll overlook the irregularity this time. Magnan, see to it the small Brodian public are notified they can remain where they are. And by the way, did you by any chance discover the technique of the indetectable drive the Quant use?
No, sir. That is, yes, sir.
Well,
there isn't any. The Quant were there all the while. Underground.
Underground? Doing what?
Hibernating. For 200 years at a stretch.
Outside in the corridor, Magnan came up to Retief, who stood talking to a tall man in a pilot's coverall.
I'll be tied up, sending through full details on my hour, your recruiting theme, Retief,
Magnan said.
Suppose you run into the city to assist the new VERP consul in settling in.
I'll do that, Mr. Magnan. Anything else?
Magnan raised his eyebrows.
You're remarkably compliant today, Retief. I'll arrange transportation.
Don't bother, Mr. Magnan. Sai here will run me over. You was the pilot who ferried us over to Rulet 1, you recall.
I'll be with you as soon as I pack a few phone numbers, Retief,
the pilot said. He moved off. Magnan followed him with a disapproving eye.
An uncool sort, I fancied. I trust you're not consorting with this kind socially.
I wouldn't say that exactly, Retief said. We just want to go over a few figures together.